reform in nurse practitioners, reducing DVT deaths, lost nursing caps, and we're going to be reviewing a little bit about DVT today. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We are moving into December here. I first off want to wish everyone in the United States a belated Thanksgiving Day. I hope not all of you were working on Thanksgiving Day, and those of you who were, I hope you did get some chance to spend some time with family and friends during the holiday time that you did have available to you. And of course, I do want to urge all of you that are brand new listeners to the show, and of course, existing listeners as well, head on over to nursingshow.com. Make sure that you take a look at some of the articles and things over there. There's still a lot of discussion on the recent article we had posted on nurses and tattoos, pros and cons. And if you want to weigh in on that or add your comment to any of the comments below there, respectful, of course, please head over and check out that link. I think that's still on the front page there at The Nursing Show. You'll find a link there in the recent articles post right there at the top of the page. I also want to thank a listener who sent in an idea for us to get together. A listener requested some information on whether we might be having a meetup or planning a trip or a travel destination, and I thought I would put a survey up to find out what the rest of you thought. So I've put up a survey kind of asking about whether or not you'd be interested in going on a nursing show cruise, maybe meeting other nursing show listeners and other nurses in general, as well as myself and maybe a few other podcaster or nurse bloggers, and what you'd like to see in something like that. So it's just three questions. It shouldn't take you more than just a few minutes to check it out. You'll find a link right on the front page of the Nursing Show site, and I'll also have a link in the show notes for this episode and in the newsletter that goes out this week. So if you would just take a few seconds, click that link and fill out that survey, because if enough people are interested, maybe I can put something together. It would be a lot of fun to get together as a group and maybe go on a trip somewhere, meet each other and talk about nursing stuff and also just talk about having some fun. So if you're interested and would just like to let me know what you'd like to do, or if you're not interested at all, either way, go over and fill out the survey so I can find out if it's something I should pursue, because I love the idea and I think it would be a lot of fun. You know, if you have an idea like that, or if you have a comment or a correction or something you want to say about an episode or an article on the site, you can leave a comment right on the article on the site, or even better yet, send me an email and send that email into comments@nursingshow.com. I love to get emails from the listeners, and it really helps me to put up information on the site that would appeal to you, and it's a great way to keep in touch with what's you want to hear from The Nursing Show. So please take advantage of that and let me know what you want to hear from us here at The Nursing Show. Let's jump on into this week's news, and I'll lead off with a story I picked up over at the pressofatlanticcity.com. This is a business section article from this particular newspaper. And on their website there, they have an interesting article. I think we've talked a little bit about this before, but how healthcare reform is likely to increase the number of nurse practitioners that are needed in communities. This talks about increasing that demand, and I expect that we may see this occur, whether certain healthcare reform options are included or not. It's something that is some version of healthcare reform is going to become law here in the United States. I think that much of the mandate is present. I don't know how it's going to look or what's going to be included in it, but certainly we are going to see some changes in how people access healthcare. Of course, I think we've seen those changes already, and certainly in places like Target and other stores like that that are offering pharmacy services, and they have now started to include some clinic services. A lot of those clinics are operated primarily by nurse practitioners, or at least have oversight by nurse practitioners. And this is something I expect to see more of. I think that it's a very cost-effective solution to presenting care, whether it's a nurse practitioner who opens her own practice individually, or whether it's nurse practitioners working in cooperation with physicians or other healthcare services and facilities. I think we're likely to see this become more of an option. Of course, what do we do to help that along? Well, I think as nurses, we need to educate the public. What is a nurse practitioner? Tell our public, find ways to reach out to our local news organizations, talk to them about what is the difference between an RN and a nurse practitioner, what's the difference between a nurse practitioner and a physician, how is our practice different, how is our focus on the patient care care options different. And I think that that's important. I think we need to distinguish the differences between what we bring to the table as nurses and what physicians and other healthcare providers bring to the table. And I think that that's something that we all can participate in, whether you're a nurse practitioner or not. I'm not, but I certainly like the idea of having a nurse practitioner available for myself and my family. And I know that when I've had family members that have needed assistance from getting more information out of some medical treatment that they've been involved with, that I've asked them to seek out a nurse practitioner associated with their physician's practice or with the hospital, and they have found a lot of success going through that option. And I think it just outlines exactly why good, high-quality nursing care is such an important part of any healthcare reform option that we enact in this country, and certainly in, I think, any country around the world where nurses are present as part of the healthcare system, and they certainly are in most places I know of. I'd really like to hear back from you. What are your comments about this? If you're a nurse practitioner who listens to the show, and I know there are quite a few of you, get back in touch with me here. Send me an email to comments@nursingshow.com. Leave a comment over in the show notes for this particular episode. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are about the increased demand for nurse practitioners, or where you see nurse practitioners as a career path for nurses going in the near future. Next up in the news is an article I picked up over at medicalnewstoday.com. It's an article about a recent special supplement from the Journal of Cardiovascular Nursing. This particular supplement is asking nurses and facilities to enact new and more stringent policies regarding the prevention of the onset of blood clots, of venous thromboembolism in patients. Now, I'm sure a lot of us know that this is a significant cause of morbidity and mortality in patients, and there have been a lot of things that we've done to change that, and most of those things, I think, are strongly in the field of good nursing care. And certainly, we've seen a lot of that, whether it's increasing patient mobility, getting them in and out of bed frequently, reducing the length of their hospital stays. All of these things are part of that process. Heck, those ridiculous things we have to put on their legs that inflate up and down all the time, and none of our patients like them. Heck, we don't like them either if we had to wear them all the time. And certainly, this is something that's important for us to continue. But what else can we do? This particular supplement is looking at some of the ways that we can increase our prevention efforts and also to increase knowledge about these things. This article says that they're still accounting for about 10% of hospital deaths annually coming from pulmonary embolism. And DVT, or deep vein thrombosis, is the leading cause of what's going to cause a pulmonary embolism. And a lot of things we do in the hospital can make significant changes in patient care. And even out of the hospital, a lot of us that are involved in other aspects of patient care, whether it's just taking care of family members, or if it's in the workplace or in home care settings, anything that we can do to do things like increase patient mobility, decrease time, or long extended periods of inactivity, all can go a long way towards helping out with this. Now, I took this article and ran with it. We're going to have a little bit more in depth about this coming up in the tip of the week later. But I would urge you to follow the link in the show notes. And if you have access to this particular journal, check out this article that I think certainly talks a lot about some of the ways that nurses significantly influence how well patients are cared for in the hospital setting and reduction of injury and comorbid factors associated with the stays in hospital certainly can be affected greatly by good, high-quality nursing care. And prevention of thromboembolism is just one of those aspects. Finally, a story I picked up at stjoenews.net, and it's an interesting article about nursing tradition. I'll just read the title of it to you. Where have all the nursing caps gone? This is a tradition that meant a lot to many nurses. If you ask any nurse who's been around in the nursing profession for maybe more than 20 years or so, where have all the nursing caps gone? Do they miss wearing their nursing caps as part of their uniform at work? This was something that became quite a badge of prestige, an accomplishment for many nurses, and yet anybody who is not part of that tradition because they're younger or a newer nurse or a male nurse like myself, you may not understand that quite so much. But it's certainly important for us to remember these traditions. And this is an interesting article that interviews a nurse practitioner in a Missouri hospital talking about coming out of school, some of the changes. I wonder how nursing students would manage today if they had to go through nursing school like many did during the 60s, for instance, when it was closed dormitories and you weren't allowed to go out or get married or anything other than be a nurse and learn nursing. It's a different world out there now, and I'm curious what your thoughts might be on this. I'd love to hear back from you. Again, comments at nursingshow.com or leave a comment over at the Nursing Show site for the news for this particular episode. And let us know what you think about nursing caps. If you're a new nurse, are you glad you don't have to wear one? And for nurses that have been around for a while, what are your thoughts? Do you miss having that cap, or do you still cherish that you earned that badge of accomplishment? Certainly like to hear from you. So definitely leave your comments over at the site or send your comments in by email. Time for this week's tip of the week, and we're going to be talking about DVT, deep vein thrombosis, and how we can recognize this in our nursing practice. What are we going to be talking about specifically? Well, what is DVT? What causes it? What are some of the risk factors we should be looking for in our patients? And what are some of the symptoms we need to be on alert for when we're looking for DVT? Also, what are some of the treatments and interventions as nurses that will help us protect our patients from DVT or treat them once they have begun to exhibit a DVT? And also, some of the things that we need to watch out for is extreme problems associated when someone has a DVT. So what is a DVT? Well, deep vein thrombosis, or DVT, a blood clot that forms within a vein deep in the body. Most often, we hear about DVT occurring in the lower extremities, the lower leg, in the popliteal area behind the knee or in the thigh. And these large veins in the leg, this return system for the blood, is a prime location because these veins are large. They are easily occluded when someone is immobile for a period of time, laying down or sitting down, and extended travel, things like that. And it becomes a prime location for blood to just sit and pool and for blood clots to start to form. If the blood doesn't continue moving and circulating, it will begin to clot pretty quickly. If the vein begins to swell associated with the presence of a clot, then that causes another condition associated with DVT and is often the cause of some of the pain associated with DVT, and that is thrombophlebitis, inflammation associated with this blood clot. What causes it? Well, we talked a little bit about it. Some of the things that can cause this are anything that damages the interior lining of a blood vessel, that tunica intima, that is associated with causing presence of a blood clot. You know, that lining is supposed to be smooth. If it's not smooth because of damage caused by trauma or a disease process, this can cause an increased risk of blood getting pulled behind an occlusion or blood slowing down through a damaged area, and that slowed down blood can start to form blood clot. Changes in blood flow, whether it's a partial blockage associated with hardening of the arteries or increased pressure or turbulence associated with blood flow. That turbulence of the blood flow kind of stirring things up a little bit and can cause problems with formation of blood clots. And anything that would cause the patient to have hypercoagulability, any kind of genetic disorder, thing that would cause the patient to have increased risk factors for forming a blood clot related to a family tradition or a family tradition. Let's try that again. And also hypercoagulability. This is anything that would cause a disease process, a genetic disorder associated with the patient that would cause them to have an increased factors in their blood for formation of a blood clot. And sometimes these may not become evident until the patient reaches a certain point in their life when these genetic markers get kicked in and they start having increased numbers of the clotting factors in their blood. Some of the risk factors, anything that would cause prolonged sitting, travel, work. A lot of people are sitting at work at their desks and they're sitting there for prolonged periods of time. This is common, believe it or not, a high risk factor. Computer programmers, young males that sit for hours and hours, 6, 8, 10 hours at a time, coding on their computers, they don't hardly move. And we've seen this. I've talked to some people about this. So if anyone who's sitting for a prolonged period of time, heck, podcasters could be one of that risk factors. You need to be aware of that. And talk to your patients if you know they sit a lot at work or planning long trips and they have risk factors for DVT, we need to help them understand some exercises, moving their legs, rotating their ankles and moving around quite a bit, getting up and walking around on the plane when they're able to do so, when doing extended airline travel. All of these can help reduce risk factors. Prolonged bed rest or immobility, anything that keeps the patient immobile is going to start pooling blood, especially because people that are on prolonged bed rest associated with an illness of some kind probably may have other factors that are going to increase their risk factors because of changes in their cardiovascular system in general, and whether they're on bed rest associated with an injury, associated with a particular disease process, a cardiac incident, or perhaps associated with pregnancy. All of these have changes associated with the cardiovascular system, and that immobility can cause that to be compounded and work in a negative way together with the bed rest to cause more blood clots. Recent procedures can also do this. Anyone who's had a recent orthopedic surgery, a recent broken long bone, OBGYN procedures, childbirth, all increase risk factors for DVT. Trauma to the lower extremities. We talked about trauma to the veins or injuries to the veins, but anything that would cause trauma to the lower extremities can cause changes in the circulatory system in the lower extremities, whether it's due to swelling of soft tissues or a broken bone. Again, these can all cause problems. Anyone that's on estrogen replacement, whether it's through therapy or for birth control purposes, this can cause someone to have an increased risk for this. Anyone that's been listening to the show for more than a couple of months probably remembers when my wife had onset of pulmonary embolism, multiple pulmonary emboli, as a result of a large DVT that had formed, and she kind of ignored some of the problems that she was experiencing and wouldn't listen to me. But again, I didn't think that was that serious. She's a healthy person otherwise, but she sits a lot at work. She had been on a long trip recently, and all of these things combined with the fact that she was taking hormonal birth control And here you go. You've got a formation of a DVT and ultimately a PE. I mean, her life was at risk for a period of time until we got that under control. Anyone with advanced stages of cancer can also show risk for blood clots. So there's a lot that goes into this, but you should keep these things in mind when you have a patient come by and make sure that you're thinking in this direction when you're looking at sending them home for treatment, or if they're staying in the facility, you know, institute those procedures that you're supposed to be using for inpatient care to reduce risk factors for DVT. We talked about this earlier in the news segment. So what are signs and symptoms? If we have a patient that's at risk or that is got some possibility of having a DVT, what would we look for? Well, localized swelling around the area, redness, warmth to the touch in that region, gradual onset of pain. And I've looked around for this because I wanted to see, it says gradual in a couple of different locations. And just apparently, you know, it's not a sudden thing. They will get aches and pain associated with this location. It may come and go. I know certainly it did with my wife, but it would be pretty severe as it built up over time. Positive Homan's sign. Now, this is pain upon dorsiflexion of the foot. So if you have someone, you can sit them with their sit them on the end of an exam table, have their knee bent at a 90-degree angle hanging down off the table, and then use bend their foot, dorsiflex their foot, and see if they're exhibiting pain. This is often seen in the calf. Periods of shortness of breath. And this is because these thrombi, these blood clots, are pretty large in size, but pieces break off the proximal end of those blood clots and travel through the circulatory system into the right side of the heart and then into the lungs, and they can block portions of the pulmonary system and cause a problem where their person's having shortness of breath because this large clot is blocking off blood flow through the lungs. They're getting plenty of air movement, but they're still having shortness of breath. So they have clear lung sounds. Clearly, they're moving air, but they're still not oxygenating. They're showing signs of shock, and they're pale, and they're becoming diaphoretic, and they're anxious, and they can't catch their breath, despite the fact that they're breathing clearly. This is a clear sign of a pulmonary embolism, and would clearly point to the fact there might be a DVT going on somewhere if it had not been caught prior to this point. Treatment of DVT, well, the first most important thing, prevention is the best option here. We don't want people to have DVTs. There's a study I remember reading about a year and a half ago that looked at the fact that DVT, anyone that's had a DVT has probably had multiple pulmonary emboli. They may have been of varying degrees of severity. The lungs get rid of those pulmonary emboli if left to their own devices, if it's not serious. And they may have had a short period of tiredness or minor shortness of breath that resolved itself pretty quickly. But it seems that, according to some of the research, that all DVTs are throwing pulmonary emboli. And so we need to be aware of this and work hard to prevent the formation of these blood clots at all, because any risk of PE is bad. Prevention is the first case. If there is the suspected formation of a DVT, we want to treat the patients gently, handle them gently. Certainly, we don't want to massage around this blood clot because we don't want to kick any blood clots loose into their system. We want to elevate the affected extremity. If it's painful to the person, warm, moist heat can be applied. And then we're probably going to see some form of anticoagulant therapy, possibly thrombolytic therapy, although it seems to me not necessarily the case in all people. But definitely, we're going to start off these patients with heparin, and then we're going to be moving them on to warfarin. So we need to review our anticoagulant labs and our PT and our PTTs or our INRs. We need to be aware of how these lab values are going to be affected when they're on anticoagulants. Also, watch for signs and symptoms of pulmonary embolism. Shortness of breath with the presence of good and adequate breath sounds in all fields. Patients exhibiting signs of shock associated with that shortness of breath certainly would be an indication of an onset of a PE, and they're going to need immediate notification of a care provider, and certainly if they're in under home care situations, we need to make sure that they're aware this is an emergency. They need to call 911 and get an ambulance to take them to the hospital immediately. This is not something to fool around with. So what are we talking about here in review? Well, we're talking about first prevention, prevention, prevention. We have to prevent the onset of DVT as much as possible. We need to understand our risk factors for our patients. Understand patients that are having increased risk factors means that these are the patients we need to focus on when we're talking about prevention measures. And certainly this might include changing birth control methods. It might include understanding and being aware of long travel and how to prevent DVT during long travel, to periodically get up, move around, to rotate the legs at the ankles, to move the legs frequently, to stand up when possible, to walk when possible on long trips. All of these can go a long way towards preventing the formation of blood clots. People who work a long time at the desk, they need to know they need to get up every hour or so, walk around, even if it's just walk around the desk. That little bit of movement can help keep that stagnant blood moving along. Definitely need to work on making sure we're doing a good assessment, making sure we're getting a good patient history. How can we understand those risk factors if we haven't asked questions and gotten a thorough patient history? And this is where a lot of things start. We need to understand our patients, and good nursing care starts with good patient histories. Treat suspected DVTs seriously and gently. We need to make sure that when we get a patient with a DVT, that we always expect a pulmonary embolism. And this is because this patient could become very serious and, in fact, can go into cardiac arrest if the pulmonary embolism is serious enough, or multiple pulmonary emboli are present that can block off significant portions of blood flow to the lungs and become very serious. Be gentle with our treatment of these patients and be prepared for that worst case scenario. I've got some great links in the show notes for this episode, including some links at the National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute and the National Institutes of Health Medline pages. I urge you to check those links out for more in-depth information to follow up on this brief review on DVT. Definitely also check in if you're in a hospital facility. I'm sure there's a lot of information available through your nursing supervisors and clinical nurse coordinators in your facility. Follow up with them and find out more, or maybe urge them to put together a DVT review continuing education program in your facility to find out more. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode, and you need to follow up on the information, because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. Time for me to wrap up the show, and I will close out. It's after Thanksgiving now, folks, so it's time to bring in some holiday music. I'm a big Christmas music fan. My kids probably think I drive them nuts with this stuff, but, you know, it's what my tradition is. I hope you'll enjoy some of these songs, and we'll return back to our regular PodSafe music after the holidays. But for the next few weeks, I'll be playing some Christmas tunes. This one from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is a kind of rocked out version of Do You Hear What I Hear by an artist by the name of Jill Parr. If you like what you hear, check it out. Go to her site. Let her know you heard it here here on The Nursing Show. And I do appreciate you supporting these independent artists. Let them know you like their music and that you like that they've provided their songs here for you to listen to. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Don't forget to please stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Me. Yeah.